Good morning. Happy New Year to everyone. We haven't seen you since December, for those of you who attended the RAN in December. It was lots of fun, and we look forward to doing that next year. Next year's theme will be, we're going to try for Family Feud. So if anyone knows that show, it'll be a bit of a different type than Jeopardy, but hopefully we'll all have fun and good time. Oh. Okay. Just a few notes before we get started today. I have them all scribbled down here. So as you know, March 31st, a good chunk of majority of our grants tend to term March 31st around that time. Grants and contracts, actually, because contribution agreements run on the federal fiscal year if they're from the federal government. So if you have a lot of grants that are terming March 31st of this year, make sure that you're following up with the PIs to see, one, do they need an extension? And if they do, are they requesting it? And it's best to do it around this time because they have to do it in writing. And if it's a sub award, so we were receiving funding from another institution, for example, and the PI here is saying, oh, no, the grant goes until 2016, but you see the fund terming at the end of March, please contact OSR and we can follow up and we can see if, one, we can extend just based on the information we have, if we need to go back to the other institution, what can be done. In a lot of those cases, even though the grant itself may be 3-4 years down the road, terming at that point, not all institutions allow us use of funds for that whole period, so we do have to go back every year and ask for an extension. So in those cases, even though the PI may be saying, no, this grant is it's 3 more years, we may not have authorization to extend, so they need to talk to the PI at the other institution to get their research office involved, and then we can process a no-cost extension. So that's important. If you have any questions, you can contact OSR, and you can contact me, and I'll look into, especially on subawards, I'll look into the subaward to see what the status is and how we can proceed. As some of you know, for CIHR, they're in the process of implementing a pretty major change to their program structure and how they're going to do program delivery and how the program through the foundation scheme is going to operate. It's a pretty significant change. So for any of you who are working with CIHR grants, even if it's the post-award of CIHR grants, I strongly recommend that you watch the CIHR info session. The link is on the RAND website, and it's also on OSR's website. A representative from CIHR came to McGill in December and gave an explanation as to the changes that are taking place. So it's very important that you get an idea of what's coming, because it will affect not only new applications but ongoing grants, because the change, the way it's being implemented, without going into the whole story, but the way it's being implemented, it will have an impact on ongoing grants that the researchers may have, because if they apply into the foundation scheme and they're rewarded, those other grants would be termed and moved into the foundation scheme. So a lot of it with CIHR is still being worked out. A lot of the details have not been confirmed, but it's important that all of us understand what's going on. And so I suggest watching the session, and if you have any questions, you can contact OSR, you can contact the grants officer for CIHR, or you can contact me, Marlene, and we'll refer you to the...
We're still trying to figure out a lot what's happening with this transition to CIHR, and we will be giving you more information as we find out, but it definitely will be impacting existing funds as they move into the new scheme. We don't know exactly how that will happen, so just at least be aware that there's stuff coming down with CIHR in the next year.
And without causing alarm, they do talk about it in the info session, that the way they're implementing it, that there is potentially a gap in funding. So usually your grant would term, March 31st, the next one would start April 1st or whatever. So the end date and the start date would basically, you go right from one to the next one. With the implementation of this, there are potentially some researchers who will have a little gap because the new grants don't start till October. And so for those who termed in the spring, there will be a little bit of a gap. They will allow no-cost extensions. They made that quite clear. They will not refuse any request for no-cost extensions. But it's important to take a look. That part of it is still being worked out. But I know that there's a widespread panic among the research community about this. So you'll probably get questions in the coming months about this, so it's good to know as much as you can, and if you have any questions, you can contact OSR. And we, too, are looking into this. You know, we don't have all the answers, but we're kind of all in the same boat. But we want to make this as smooth as possible, the transition to this new system. And for those who couldn't attend the Jeopardy session or just wanted to do it again or wanted to challenge your friends, however you want to spend your lunch hour, if you want to play Jeopardy, that's fine. So what we did was we created we actually created the game again, and then so there's the game, there's the rules, and you can actually, when you click on it, let's say this is, and see that answer is incorrect. So there's that, so you can play around with that. It's interactive. We will post this on the website shortly. And then for those who want more information on you didn't know why you got the answer wrong, there's actually an answer key. So it would explain why each one. Oops. Yeah, so here's the answer for each slide. Each slide, if you print it out, will have an answer beside it explaining why that answer was correct. So for those of you who want to do that or you want to just pass it along to people who weren't there, that's great.
We would strongly recommend that you share this presentation, given that it's a really, really good summary of everything that we covered last year. So share it with the lab folks, Sarah, share it with the research associate, the lab technicians, anybody who touches research. We strongly recommend that this be shared. We love it. So,
and we did get the feedback from the session that it'd be really nice to have those type of quizzes after every session, but and we agree it would be actually kind of fun, but we need to keep them for the session in December, because if we give you all the answers now, we won't have a game to play in December. So that's kind of the reason why we decided not to do that. But if there's demand, we thought of maybe creating like a little quiz, so after the meeting you could go in and you could just test your knowledge with a few questions on what was discussed. That's something we're thinking about. Obviously, as we all know, resources are limited, so we're doing what we can. But that's something we've been thinking about. Now on to the tri-agencies. You may have heard that they were doing consultations before Christmas on the open access policy. The tri-agencies are moving towards an open access policy that's pretty much the same as the NIH, where a year after publishing a journal article, it has to be in an open access repository. And this is something that has been in Quebec for a while with Quebec has had that system for quite some time where things go public through the journals. But in this case, they're going to make it mandated for all tri-agency funding that there's open access. That just finished its consultation, and I believe in February or March they'll be giving a response. So I think the intention is that it comes into effect next year. We'll tell you more once it's fully confirmed, but just let you know about that. And they're also asking for feedback on the new science and technology strategy. They're implementing the next science and technology strategy, so they're asking for feedback on that. You can find all the information on that on any of the websites of SHRC, CIHR, and NSERC. They're all there. Also on science.gc.ca, any tri-agency policies, documents, can be found on science.gc.ca. It's the one spot where it's the repository for all those documents, including CFI. And finally, the February meeting will be taking place in New Residence Hall. I just wanted to let people know where that is in case you're not sure. It's the residence that was a hotel. It's on Park, just north of Prince Arthur. So if you get off the metro, because hopefully it won't be as cold as today, but I can't guarantee. If you get off the metro at Place des Arts, you can just walk right up Park, and it's about 5 minutes. I promise it's there. At some point, you will think we sent you you'll start to see Mount Royal Park and wonder if you're going the right way. You're going the right way. Just keep walking. And it's once you get into the building, it's in the downstairs. So we'll be there to show you how to get there. And so on to the actual presentation today. So I'm going to pass it over to Elvie. Elvie has some announcements as well to discuss, and then she'll talk about the fund balances and profile report, record retention of supporting documentation table, and then I will go through the RAN website. We don't expect that these presentations will take the full session, so if it ends early, it ends early. That's fine. I don't think anyone minds. But also, if you feel that at the end there are questions that you want answered that perhaps don't even have anything to do with this, but you'd like discussed, don't hesitate to ask us a question, and we're happy to use that time to your advantage.
All right. Thank you, Amy. So good morning, everyone. I apologize ahead of time if I cough or I need to blow my nose, because we're all getting over colds, it seems. So one update that I do have that's critical is I'm thinking most of you received an email from Financial Services about the encumbrances, benefit encumbrances on grants. So due to the change in pay frequency, there was an issue that surfaced regarding the encumbrance, the commitments related to benefits. So all fund types are affected. It's the highest priority right now. ISR is working very hard on resolving this issue. So you need to keep an eye out on all, especially grants, because the salary component is a significant amount. And so you need to keep an eye out to make sure that whatever balance is available, that you calculate whatever benefits would have been encumbered on those funds. Okay, so that's just in the meantime. We think it's going to be resolved within the next, it should have been resolved by today, but it's a bigger problem than we thought. So I'm thinking by midweek next week it's going to be resolved, and the encumbrances will hit the funds again to reflect an accurate balance. So that's critical that everyone keeps an eye on that. I don't think we sent the announcement via the RAN. So we will be sending it via the RAN this when we get back to the office. So we apologize for triplicate receipts of these emails, but there's different people in different listservs, so we need to make sure everyone gets that email. Another update is the Tri-Agency Financial Year-End, as Amy referred to it earlier. So for financial services, of course, you need to review all your grants to make sure that any errors are corrected way before March so that the financial reporting is as accurate as possible. So we encourage you to review the funds in question under your jurisdiction. So if there are any issues, please contact your fund administrators and or their supervisors if those fund administrators are not available. And one more update. We started work on the NIH findings because we will be audited in 2016. And it's quite a serious audit. It's an intense audit. It's a true audit. It's not a monitoring visit. So what we're doing is we did set up a kickoff meeting last week, myself, Marlene, and a couple of other members of our teams. And we've identified issues. We do have quite an extensive list so far. And now we're going to start looking at solutions. So once we start looking at solutions and implementing solutions, communications, and through these sessions, we will be coming back to you to see if the solutions are viable and then put them in place. So those are the updates. Okay, so we thought in this session we'd go over all the communications you received in December regarding document retention, the fund balance profile report, the POPs, timesheets, revision. So there was a lot of communication that went out. And we just want to make sure that everyone is on the same page and understands what are the requirements, and so that everyone understands what is coming down the pipeline vis-a-vis, especially monitoring. So we'll go over the retention document line by line so that everyone knows what's expected. So just to start, and Amy, I might need your help. Page down, let's see. Okay. So the fund profile report, do I just click here? No. Is this going to the site, Amy? Not sure.
You did the talking, I'll do
okay.
There.
So the fund profile report, can I see a show of hands of how many of you used it so far? Okay, a few. And what about your PIs? Have they used it? Yeah? No? Okay. So as you, if you do use it, you will see that it's a very complete report with drill down capabilities. And you can access it using the ID of the PI. So that you see a summary of all those funds. Is there the PDF? The PDF.
Yeah, you want to see the sample one?
Oh, sure. Sorry, I'm going to get it up on the screen so I can speak to it. Okay. So, okay. So when reviewing this profile report, what you need to focus on first and foremost is the funds that are terminating, because those are the ones that we need to act on fairly quickly. So Charles, our Crystal Report expert, developed it in such a way where the flags come up in a color-coded way so that you can't miss it. And so you really need to go and take a look at what is terming, especially if it's already termed and it's in a red, so that you're more proactive in ways whereby if it needs a renewal, then you're contacting OSR and making sure that renewal is going through on time so that we're not blocking those funds. And also, if it's really terming and it has a balance, we need to know well ahead of time so that if there is a balance, we don't want to return monies to the funding agencies if we don't need to. Because in most cases, you'll see when reviewing this report that researchers spend their funds, one by one, they're spending it down. So they might have a larger balance in some funds where those expenditures might belong to the fund that's terming. So we need to make sure that we're doing that kind of a review of these funds. Another nice aspect of this report is the drill down capabilities. So this is a PDF because we can't show live information due to confidentiality. So if you drill down on expenses, for example, you'll go down to the expenditure category. And if you drill down on any one of those account codes, is that what I'm seeing? Sorry, it's too small. So what you do is you drill down on the expense category, so whatever account code, and you'll see the details. So materials and supplies, for example, if you drill down on that, you'll see what was charged in materials and supplies. So the researcher, if he wants to go see what's going on with his or her fund, they can easily access that information now. The same is true for... So this is just a drill down showing you how it works. Oh, it's not going to the next page. Oh. I'm sorry, guys. I'm so inept. My assistant is not here today, so you're going to have to be in. Brenda's
okay.
Not here. Okay. I just wanted to go to the next page.
Next page?
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, everybody. This is not... technology's not our forte here.
No.
There we go.
Okay, so then if you drill down on materials and supplies, you'll see that there is the actual supplier name with the amount, and we've netted out all the GST, PSTs, and all of those rebate things because it was too lengthy and too many details, and the PI doesn't really want to see all of those details. Next page. Thank you, Amy. Okay, the same is true for any commitments, so the POs, they will also show now. So if you drill down, those details are there. Yeah, you could go to the next page.
Next page.
Okay. Okay, and the salaries, this is the commitments, but we also have salary details. So we don't have a screenshot of it. But for salary details, if individuals are getting paid off of a grant, then those salary, the details of the person who's getting paid, you will see the name, the amounts that were paid. The same is true for BISA transactions. You drill down on the account code 600-200, and you'll see the student names that were paid from that grant. Now, when it comes to salaries and the commitments related to those salaries, those you will not see. You'll only see the amount, and that's because the HR data is not connected to the financial data, and that's something we're working on. So it will come down the pipeline, but it's not as easy to implement in this report. But you still see the amounts. And if you do need the details of the commitments appearing on those funds, you can call financial services. We have internal reports that we can run to see whose name is tied to what salary commitment.
So that's it for that one.
Okay.
This one?
Flags.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. The flags.
Yes. Getting that. Sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay. Another aspect of this report that's really nice is that we have the flag. So we have the P-card flag that when you're hovering over it, shows you the total dollars that could potentially hit the default FOPO if it's not reconciled at the end of the month. So if it's not reconciled at the end of the month, those charges will be charged directly to whatever fund is tied to that FOPO. That amount that you see when you're hovering over that flag is not part of the fund balance as you see it on this report. It's just telling you that that fund balance will be decreased by said amount if it's not reconciled to the proper FOPLs at the end of each month. Okay? Yeah, I'm getting there. For the HR flag, that identifies that it is telling you that an appointment form is still in transit, if you will, in that FOPL. So if the fund is closing, you have to make sure that that HR flag is not showing a Y, because it means something is still in the pipeline. You're still going to be getting charges. So these are things you need to be looking at. Okay.
To this report,
it was sent through the RAN website, listserv, sorry, and so the link is there, and everybody has access to it. It even gives you log-on instructions. If you have any questions, just call us, and we'll help you through it. Okay.
So this is good.
I mean, that was it.
That's it. Yeah, I think I love this report, and we really are trying again to get the word out to our PIs. While we know that some of them won't run this and will rely on you to run this report, actually we think that once the PIs kind of sees this and understands what they can get out of it, they'll say, ah, this is fantastic. Because we've had a few experiences where we have shown our advisory committee that has PIs, we've shown ADRs, and they're like, oh, this is fantastic. It's just, I think we need to get the word out there to our PIs to say, you can do this, this is easy. It's the login, they're gonna be a little bit afraid by the login process, but once they're set up, it's easy to run. So you just need to kind of hold their hand a little bit and say, you just need to do this two-step initial process, and after that you can run this whenever. So we really, really want to get the word out there about this report. We think it's a great, great tool for everybody that deals with research funds.
And so they can view it as the McGill bank account, if you will, because it has all of their FOPLs listed, and they're all categorized. So it's all research funds, unrestricted funds, whatever funds is under their jurisdiction, it's all there. So it's a one-stop shop, and that's how you should kind of sell it to them. And they can view this from wherever they are. They don't have to be sitting at their desk at McGill University. They can be anywhere and view this report. Sure. Yeah. Yes.
Rather than going in and putting each ID number, it would be good if I could at least.
Yeah. So I'm going to repeat the question. The question is there a way of running it by jurisdiction? So by org jurisdiction or by FST jurisdiction? And the answer is no. We can't run this report by org or by FST because the report would be massive. Okay. And this report was really designed to serve the PI so that they could access their own funds from wherever and see the status of their funds. However, there are other reports that exist already by FST jurisdiction and by org. And if you don't know where those are, again, contact us and we'll lead you to them. So what my suggestion is in the best practice is that when you're reviewing your jurisdiction, and that's the way it should be probably, is that you're running your own org reports or your own FST jurisdiction reports so that you can see an overall picture of where your PI stand. Because you will get all of your PIs under your jurisdiction and you will get the flags as they appear here. So you would run that first to get an overall picture. But then if you have a PI that you need to assist with his funds more, then you would go to this report and zoom in on all those funds under that PI. For the FSTs, we do have a roundtable on February 5th, I believe, and we're going to be gathering more information from you regarding the FST jurisdiction report and what we can do there to help you manage your funds. And from an org perspective, take a look and see what's there. And if you can't find anything, please call me, and I'll direct you where you need to go. I saw another hand here. I'll take this side first and I'll come here. Yes. This is every night.
Okay.
So it's dynamic. That's the beauty of this report. We've never had anything like that before. Everything we had was as at a month end. So by the time that month closes, the balances are really not valid anymore because things are ongoing. This is dynamic, so it's on the fly, and you're getting the balances every day, accurate balances. Any other questions on this side? Nope. Yes. Hi, Debbie.
I just had a question about the database in the hospitals and using the web-based reports for us. We have several problems, whether we try to print them, whether we try to export them, it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Do you also have this available in a crystal report that we can download?
We do have it in a crystal report, but we'll take it down. We'll take down these notes and bring it back to Charles, and I'll get back to you on that, Debbie.
Because then that brings me to a second problem that I have, is that my computer crashed and I no longer have crystal.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, because my initial license was through accounting when it was first introduced. Is that still available through some mechanism?
I'm not sure we're giving out new licenses for crystal anymore because everything is web-based. But I will speak to Charles and see what, you know, if I can connect him with you to, so you can tell him directly what your, really? Okay, so maybe he could connect with you so we can see what is the problem exactly, and then we'll try and fix that for you. But that's, thank you for bringing that up.
I don't have a license because it was always under accounting.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Did you?
Oh, yeah, on that note, I took crystal report training recently, and it was mentioned that McGill has maxed out its licenses, so for any new licenses for crystal reports, it has to be bought by that department or...
I'm willing to buy it, actually, at this point, because it's not...
You can buy it from the bookstore. They have the version that works with McGill's systems.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think before buying it, Debbie, let's see what Charles can do to assist you with your issue, web-based. And maybe that can be worked out, save you some money.
Yeah, everyone has access to the web-based one, but if you want the full crystal reports, that's where you have to buy the license.
Were there other hands on this side? No. Any more questions? Yes.
I was wondering, do you have any idea when the HR aspect
will be for the commitments? For salary commitments or POPs? What are you... Because POPs is as it gets charged, that's how you see it on your grant. There is no way to track what's coming down the pipeline for POPs. Okay, so for the salaries, Charles is working on it. So it's not an easy fix, but it's on his priority list to get it linked to this report.
So I'm trying to, LV maybe can repeat, so people who might want to watch the video will have it there. But the other nice feature about this is when you click on the fund number, so everything that is in blue is basically, you can drill down. So I didn't include a copy of the fund, but if you click on the fund number, it gives the information that RFMS has put into...
Oh, in fund text.
Exactly.
The banner form FOA text. Thank you for that. That's
so
a good point.
You have access to that information as well. It doesn't include all the terms and conditions. So again, I would recommend that if you do see a fund that has like a term date, or especially the ones that you're looking into, like the 30, 60, 90 day, notices of, ooh, this fund is turning soon, I need to do something. I would then recommend going into the info at terms and conditions and seeing if there's something there that's going to help you guide you to what are next steps, especially as Amy mentioned, if we're a sub, then that is going to clue you in to say, oops, we need to do something. We don't have the authority here to extend. We need to do an extra step. I'll contact OSR for help. So, it's kind of like a combination of multi-tools that just is there for you.
There's a question here.
You mentioned that the report is in real time. Is there a way to use it at all as a year-end report and see it, let's say, as of December 31st?
Yes, so when you're accessing this report, it does ask you for dates. So you can put as December 31st or whatever date you're monitoring, you can put it, you can go back, you can go forward. Yes. Since we're talking about fund balances and profiles, I just wanted to mention that since year end is coming along, The renewals, as you know, we've done this for several years. The automatic renewals for all tri-agency funds go in on April 1st, so those funds will all be renewed on April 1st. So if they're running low on balances, that's when the renewal will go in, just as a side note. Any more questions on this report? Okay. Okay, so we'll talk about the document retention. So although this document or this, it's not a policy, so it's not something that the university has mandated as something that needs to be kept in a certain format in each department or faculty, but it is our responsibility to ensure that all documents are readily available in case of any audit, not just a sponsor audit, but a Deloitte audit, internal audit. We have to be able to substantiate any charges on our ledgers when questions are asked. So although it's not mandated, no, we didn't receive any big formal memo from the provost or the principal on record retention, although I think it might be coming down the pipeline sooner or later, it is something that we did have to implement due to the tri-agency non-satisfactory rating because we were not able to substantiate many of our charges when asked for documentation. So we'll go line by line. I think you all received this document, and it's on our site, on the RAND site and on our financial web services site if you need to access it. But we'll go line by line, and you can ask questions as we go just to make sure that we're all on the same page. Okay. So accounts payable. So for invoices, where you see not applicable, it means that they're being kept by central finance, okay, which means you don't need to be taking copies of the invoice you're paying. Once it's sent to financial services, we pay it, it's scanned, and we keep it in Minerva. So that's something that we have centrally. When it comes to a packing slip, that is something that we do not keep centrally because we don't have central receiving, so we're not able to keep track of packing slips. And funding agencies ask for these, especially when it comes to CFI. Marilena's nodding yes. They're the ones that really ask for packing slips. They need to see it. So, yes? Yeah. So when you're receiving equipment or whatever in your departments, make sure that the packing slip is kept by your department. Payment requests, again, those are scanned images and they're stored in Minerva, so there's no need for you to worry about that. Procurement card, P-card slip receipts, that's a biggie. That's one where we run into a lot of problems because sometimes the researchers are not coming to you and giving you those receipts. So we need to make an effort in trying to get those receipts from the PIs. And all you need to say is that this is in case of an audit and we're basically helping the PI to be compliant with the guidelines. So when you're seeing P-card transactions on the funds, we need to make sure that we have those P-card receipts. This is where an area where we just did not do well, and we need to really improve here. Yes, Kevin.
Two questions for the packing slips. If the PO is clearly indicated on it, can we forward it to accounts payable? Will it get scanned and linked? How does that work? Would it be
Packing slip?
Yeah. It's because there was a time where they would say, just send, if you can, send your packing slips too. It's even better. But now it sounds like you're
No. The question is can you send your packing slips to accounts payable, and accounts payable will scan them and tag them to the PO, and that's not something that accounts payable will do, so you need to be able to keep them at your department level.
Second question. So now it's 2014, so you've got a lot of P-card receipts that are 10 years and older now. Is there, because I'm not going to initiate cleanup, quote-unquote, so can I just start shredding some old stuff? Or do we suggest archive,
Well, the federal law is that we keep all our documents for 7 years following the closure of that grant. So if it's 7 years, with the exception of CFI, which is that 10 years, Marilena?
Up to 12
years. So for CFI grants, I would not destroy anything. For anything else...
years and older, shred. Anything else, just
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Quotations and proposals. So all of those are kept on MMP once the quotes are accepted. So any questions so far about accounts payable? Okay. Banking. So for the cash deposits, so the stamped receipt, that needs to be kept by the department. We do not keep that centrally. The check deposit memos and deposit slips. So if memos come with the deposit, do we scan those, Linda?
For checks that we deposit,
yes. So if we receive a check with attached backup documentation, memos, or whatever comes with that check, we scan that. But we encourage you to keep whatever you have in support of a check receipt back at your department. And these credit card authorization forms, these, I believe, are related to when you're holding a conference registration. So those also need to be kept at your departmental level because they're not sent to us centrally. Any questions with banking? Okay. Fees, well, that's to be determined. That's one of our biggest pain in the neck, if you will. We don't have a solution for fees just yet, so that we're still working on that as part of our trade committee.
More to come in 2014.
Yes. We're benchmarking with other universities, so we're trying to get a consensus of how we're going to do it across the board. We're also bringing that in Cabo, Cora. We're trying to get our forces together so that we could go back to tri-agency with an easy fix, but we'll see how that goes. And as we get news on that, we'll bring it back to this forum. For journal entries, this too, because it's very decentralized in all departments. Oh, I'm sorry. Next page. Because journal entries is decentralized and a lot of departments and faculties process their own entries, you need to make sure that when you're processing an entry affecting a research grant, especially a tri-agency, you need to get the PI's approval. So if you're moving expenses from one fund to another, or you're usually it's moving from one fund to another, you need to get the PI's approval. So if it's an email, that's acceptable. And if there's backup documentation, you need to keep that centrally. So you need to be able to substantiate that journal transfer. Any questions about journal entries?
Do we have to send the authorization to someone else?
No. You keep it centrally, and in case of an audit, if they pick that transaction, we will come to ask you for the evidence that the PI has approved it. Journal transactions, Linda, you have to help me here. I don't think it goes through their approval queues. No, it does not. It's the initiator, and then it normally comes to central. So it wouldn't hit their queue. I'm good? Okay. For advances, you don't need to keep copies of those because they're scanned centrally. And now we move to travel. So are we okay with journals? No question? No, well, a travel advance? Yeah. So we keep that centrally. We process it centrally and scan it.
No, I know, but I don't. Travel will also accept a scanned copy of the advance.
You mean like a payment request?
Like a signature?
I don't understand what your question is. I'm sorry.
An expense report, but a travel advance.
Yes. Okay.
So then is it up to us to keep the original?
According to our notes, no. We're keeping that centrally. If a scanned image is like an original, right? So it's acceptable. Therefore, you don't need to keep another copy at your end. Okay?
So do you want to keep that?
Just a sec. Sorry, I'm just going to take this question then.
Can I just add something? some point there's going to be an expense report, then the original will be required. So that's probably why they accept, because they accept options for advances, because at some point you have to do the originals on the expense report.
The original receipts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like for example, you know, you can keep everything, but I just tell the claimant to keep the original so they can be responsible for it, because at some point they'll have to account for it on an expense report. Mm-hmm. That's why I think they accept scanned copies.
Yep.
The originals will have to come in at some point.
That's right. So the question is whether or not you have to keep copies of your travel advance request. Travel accepts scanned copies. If you're scanning it with the signatures and sending it to them, they're accepting it. So in my opinion, no, you don't need to keep those copies at your end, because eventually, like Kevin mentioned, you will be submitting original receipts for that advance. So to keep another copy at the departmental level is not necessary. Okay. So for travel expense reimbursement, again, all original receipts need to be submitted to financial services when the expense report is submitted. And we keep the expense report centrally with all the original receipts. So you don't need to keep the expense report at your end. Now, I know some of you do, due to expense reports being lost in transit at times. And if you choose to do that, that's great, because that would help us in case something gets lost. But just so you know, we do keep it centrally. Any question? I'm sorry?
It's going to support you print.
Any questions with expense reports? No? Okay. U-print, this you need to keep evidence that you have written authorization from the PI. Before charging any U-print transactions. So that you need to keep centrally, at the department level, because we don't keep that centrally. Okay. And now we move on to the payroll transactions. So the hire offer letter, this is all stuff that you need to keep at the department level. So all offer letters, before you even process a Minerva appointment form, you need to have authorization from the PI that he or she is hiring this individual and needs to provide you with the full pool distribution. All of this needs to be kept at the department level, and this is something that is always audited, and we need to be able to get this as soon as the selection is made. Yes? Yes, so that's the next one. It's retro full pulls. So any increase or any changes to the original payroll distribution, so if the PI originally asked you to pay LV Colette on said grant for $10,000, and now he's changing his mind and wants to give me a raise for $5,000, so it's $15,000, that's going to be a change in appointment form. You need to have that in writing. You can't just process it. We need to have evidence that the PI is authorizing a change to the initial distribution.
Does that apply to BSAT too?
I'm sorry?
Does that apply to BSAT?
Yes, BSAT's coming, and yes, it does. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, Ellie. It says here, please refer to standard templates for all positions. Where can we find those?
Those are all on the HR site.
They're all in one location?
I believe the sites have been quoted as references at the end of this presentation.
Oh, okay.
But what we'll do is, if you don't find it, let us know, and we'll send something through the RAN. Yeah, they're all on the
HR.
I know, they're all on the RAN. They're all on the HR.
Yeah. They're on the HR website. But we could link to it.
We could maybe link it to our RAN,
mm-hmm.
So that it's easier for you guys to go and find stuff. Okay, we'll do that. So anyways, to get back to the appointment forms, offer letters, retros, this is something that you need to make sure you keep, because in the past we had no evidence of PI approval, okay, and we didn't do well. So I'm confident that we'll do better in the next monitoring visit coming up in 2016. So this is a big one. And POP timesheets, well, you all received the emails that there was revisions to those timesheets because of the tri-agency. We needed to implement a line that showed PI authorization. or the delegate. And so that's been done, and all of those revised timesheets are also on the HR site. But we will link those specific links back to our RAN so that you can go to one place and find them quickly. Okay, so we need to keep those timesheets at the departmental level. And when we're doing audits, we're going to come back to you, and they should be readily available. Any questions? Okay, and then BISA, same thing. BISA, the form, actually, when you're processing a payment for BISA, there is a line right away that asks for the full poll distribution and the PI authorization. Okay. And this is just information and links that brings you back to the POPS timesheets. So, again, we'll link this back to our RAN. And I just want to add one more thing. So even though this is not mandated, it is our responsibility, as I mentioned at the beginning. And we in financial services in our FMS, the monitoring and compliance team that reports to me, tests different transaction streams at different times. So when we're testing them, we're coming to you and asking for backup. And so this is where we're going to test that the backup is being kept according to this recommended document. Okay? So if we come to you for a POPS timesheet and the timesheet's not there, then we know there's an issue that's not being done. And we're going to come back and communicate until we're satisfied with the results. All the results are communicated back to the dean and to the FFOs and should trickle down to whoever works under their jurisdiction. And we're going to be meeting with the FFOs and possibly the deans in February, bringing to them results of Q1 and Q2 for fiscal 14, which we're wrapping up now. We're going to give a result and see where we stand. So I will come back to this form to give you, a little bit of an update of where we stand, how are we doing, because I think, if we're all together and we know that we're heading in the right direction, well, then that's very encouraging. And if we're not, then there is an issue. I don't know what the issue could be, but together we'll work out whatever those kinks are.
I'm going to go there just again because we're recording. I just wanted to add that this record and retention table has not necessarily been circulated to PIs and deans and ADRs and chairs. So there is going to be a memo coming out soon by VP Goldstein that will be going to the Associate Deans of Research, and we will be asking them to circulate and trickle that down so that our PIs and our faculty and everybody is very much aware, so that when you're asking them, oh, please send me an email, they're going to say, why are you asking me this? And you can say, we have to. So there will be communication going down there as well, so that everybody's aware of this of these requirements. And the only other thing I would add is that when we say a lot of the keep emails, the hard part with that is that we have to be careful that they're not being kept in your individual inboxes. So you really need to go back at this point in time, go back to your departments, go back to your faculty and say, what is our plan for keeping centrally these documents, so that when you do get the email from the PI to say, yes, please charge this FOPO for this postdoc or this research associate, you're printing out that email or you're scanning that email, you're saving it as a PDF in a central location, because you might not be there in 3 years when tri-agency comes or when NIH comes, and then we're stuck. So we might have implemented this, you might have gotten the email, but we don't have access to it. So there really needs to be that extra step where those conversations need to start happening at the department and the faculty levels to say, where do we keep this? So that would be, and then I'm going to leave you to answer the question.
That's a great point. That's a very good point. Thanks, Marty. Yes.
To that point, I know there was some talk about giving people who are affiliated staff some server space, because my hard disk is losing files, so I'm losing some of this documentation as we speak, if it was scanned.
But you would be...
I'm on the McGill platform, and I have access to no server.
We can talk offline, but wouldn't you be working for the department or the faculty? But we can talk.
Yeah, we can talk offline, but that's really an internal departmental thing. So, okay, we'll take that down. Yes.
For the timesheets, can they be scanned and the original be shredded?
Was recommended.
Yeah, usually if you're scanning it, you can shred the original, but as long as all the signatures are readily available. Scanning is the way to go because you don't want to be keeping duplicate piles of stuff. I saw another hand.
You might want to mention that when, if you go, we'll link to this record and retention, but when you go to the financial website as well where this record retention is, there is also some guidance as how best to keep these documents. So there is guidance as to we recommend scanning, we recommend that you build some shared folders that, you know, has HR, that has offer letters, that has time, like come up with a structure so that then you just need to save those emails into those structures so that it's easy to retrieve them. So there is guidance.
There's recommendations, yeah. And yeah, it's actually on this page right at the bottom. You'll see the links there, and those are the links you can go to. And it has the document and retention responsibilities and also recommendations. So I highly recommend that you refer to that link. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. So I'm going to flip it back to Amy, who's going to bring you to the RAN website. Thank you. Oops.
Okay, so to start, we'll be putting, I'll show the RAN website in a second here. I just wanted to show one thing before I forget. Because this was a conversation we were just having. So these are some guidelines that we have, well, actually borrowed from other institutions, but anyway, with actual authority to borrow. So the Apple idea does not originate with me. It was someone else. I have to give it to the person. It wasn't me. But this is good. We'll be putting these up on the website shortly as a tool to kind of leave, you know, on your desk as, you know, if a document is you're not sure, should I be keeping this document, should I not? These are some guidelines as to what should be kept, what should be chucked. The first rule is always if it exists already, like if you're scanning it, you don't need a paper copy because you've already scanned it and put it in a repository. So it's a matter of ensuring that you're keeping information that's very important, so that documents a decision, supports departmental reporting, performance accountability requirements, gives context to understand the department's roles and responsibilities. In the case of research administration, it's mostly to document the decision. So you don't, there's some people don't get confused on this, and you don't need to save the email where you ask the PI, you know, do you authorize this? You don't need to save that as one email, and then when they come back and they say, yes, I authorize it, you save that one as another email. You know, you just need the final decision, and then that email string should document the whole decision tree, or, you know, how that decision came to be. You don't need to document every little step at that road. So once the final decision is made, you can clear out all the other kind of transitory information that you've kept. And that's important to remember too, is that a lot of information that probably we deal with is actually transitory. It's not documenting a decision. So it's the stuff you need to keep is the information that actually documents the decision that you want to keep. You know, you need to keep that. So we'll be putting this up on the website shortly. But back to and slideshow. So we're still working on the RAN website, still work in progress, but I have to log in. Oh, I forgot about that. Sorry, just a second. Now, my access will look a bit different because I'm an editor, so it shows me little things up here. This is what, if you're a web editor. So don't worry about that. That's just how mine looks. But you'll see here we have several, once you log in, you have research administration roles and responsibilities. This we summarized in the first session of the RAN last January. We had talked about roles and responsibilities, so this is just a snapshot of key roles and responsibilities. And then for our OSR and RFMS, you click on the link, and then there's even more about which each area of OSR and RFMS and what they do. There's RFMS. Hopefully the link works. So you'll find all the information here, so it helps to determine where you need to go, where to direct your question, and who's responsible for what. Again, all McGill, anyone who has McGill credentials, like a McGill ID and a password, can access this website, so don't ever hesitate to send it to a PI. If there's something on here that you want them to see, they can access it as well. Students can access it technically as well. So it's not just restricted to RAND members. It's anyone with a McGill ID can get on here. Then you'll find research policies and regulations, just a list of key policies, and a little bit of a blurb on what they are. Research administration announcements. This is where we started saving things that have gone out to usually the RAND listserv or sometimes the financial services listserv or been posted on the McGill channels. Anything that we think is of importance to research administration, we've been grabbing the link and putting them here. So it's a good spot. If you're like me, you remember seeing that somewhere, but you can't remember what website or what email or what the title was. So this is a good spot to start. If you recall that you saw a message go out and you're not sure where to look, this is a good spot because you will find the link to pretty much most announcements. And upcoming RAND sessions, again, still to be confirmed for today. Ta-da, I'm speaking. So next session will be interinstitutional agreements and then managing academic status, and all the other ones will be confirmed shortly. We do have the plan for all the sessions. We're just waiting to confirm with the speakers and the venues. So we'll have it all as soon as possible. Previous RAND sessions, these are where you'll find the videos and the presentations. What we really wanted to highlight was the research administration toolbox. This is something that I will be adding a lot of things to in the next week or two. We're getting there. So for tutorials right now, we just have the InfoEd tutorial. This was updated in the fall, October 2013. So you can click on that, and it's a little how-to guide on InfoEd. It's very helpful for anyone who has access or doesn't know. You have access, but you don't know what you're looking at. It's good to do the tutorial. And for the cheat sheets, we have a few list of acronyms, expense eligibility grid. We'll be putting up more things in this grid shortly. And then frequently asked questions. Right now, we just have frequently asked questions for delegation of signing authority because those are the only questions we got. So if you'd like other things on the frequently asked questions, please let me know, and we'll be happy to develop more questions for this. Right now, we're developing the material, assuming what people want to see. But we really do. I really would like everyone to let me. If there's something on there that you'd really like, or you'd like a section added, please let me know, and we can definitely look into adding it. And there's a section for the financial services team. It used to be on the FSDs, but it used to be on the financial services website. Now we've moved it over here. This is material for them. And then resource quick links. You'll find links to Microsoft Exchange. So if you're off-site, you can access your email. I was surprised a lot of people didn't know where that link was, so I've put it here. InfoEd. Again, InfoEd is web-based, so you can access it anywhere. Minerva, Banner, and instructions on connecting to remote desktop. That's from the IT knowledge base. And then you can find on OSR, I've divided them up by OSR, financial services. Financial services has a lot. So Brenda went through and grabbed pretty much most of the links you would need for your day-to-day activities. It's really handy. Even I'm using it when I'm talking to PIs and I need to send them a link quickly. I just go and copy the link and then send it. Human resources links. And then there's Government of Canada. Government of Canada, there's the Tri-Agency Financial Administration Guide. Agreement, the MOU, Treasury Board of Canada Travel Directive, because that does apply to some, not so much grants, but some contracts. You still need to be aware of it. And the Government Electronic Directory Services. This is really handy. I just want to take a minute to explain this to people. CIHR especially, I don't know those who deal with CIHR, they never give their phone number or their email. They just, maybe you'll have the person's name, but it's really hard to track someone down if you when you're trying to get an answer. In this case, you can either type some of the person's name in and hit search, or you can actually drill down by agency. So this is all the government departments. And by federal government rules, every person who is employed by the federal government as an employee, even in the minister's office and things like that, have to have a GEDS entry. So you can find the person this way. So I've clicked on SHRC, and you'll see here, you'll see all the divisions of SHRC. And I want to talk to someone in finance. So I go into Common Administrative Services, Finance and Awards Administration, and then you'll see here, so we want Awards Administration, you'll see everybody. And if you click on them, you can drill down and see their email and their phone number. Yeah, so, and it's especially handy for, I'm sure as you know, the government, as you've all realized, the government has a lot of turnover. So the person you're dealing with 3 weeks ago, you go to email them and you get a bounce back that this person no longer works there, and you're just left in the cold. This is a really good way. So if you know... Yeah, it happens here too. But so if you know where they worked, if you can see the division where they worked, you can drill down and you can find the division. So you may not get the exact person, but you can at least get close, as close as possible to the answer you need to find.
Now all these people are wondering why they're getting so many emails. What's up with this?
Yes, and you know, that's, well, it's something actually that the government employees use on other government employees. Like, that's how they find each other, too. Like, I found you on GEDS, you know the answer, I saw where you work. So, this is actually, it's a great tool. I have it bookmarked. See, if you go to CIHR, you can find everybody, and it's incredibly helpful on your day-to-day. So, bookmark it, always use it, and you can find the link. You can find the link right on the RAND website, and it'll change your life. And you can send it to PIs too. PIs are usually really appreciative because you can drill down to the actual agency and then grab the link. So if you send them the link for CIHR, they can see everybody under CIHR, and it's really helpful for everyone to get in contact with the right person. Oh, sorry. Yes?
Under human resources links. We were talking about maybe linking to these standard templates. Would they be there already, or do you see them?
I see payroll timesheets. Can we maybe click on them?
Okay, so we'll link it there.
McGill.
Yeah.
And templates for the appointments. Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's where it'll be. We'll link it directly from there.
Thank you.
So it doesn't link from, what is nice is that it just doesn't link you to the HR website and then you're trying to figure out where it is. This links you to the spot where you actually want to go so that you're not searching.
If HR changes something to theirs, then this will change, right?
Well, that's where we need to remap.
Okay.
Well,
HR also changes.
Well, yeah. Well, it depends. If they keep the same web page, if they update the web page, yes, it would be the same information. Okay. So at McGill, they're trying to make everybody do that, but people tend to create a new web page and then delete the old one, which then kills everybody's links. So it all depends on how it's done. I know for HR, there was, I'll look into the linking, but there was an issue because some of it makes you log in, so it was really hard for us to link. Because when you go on the HR website and you try and get some things, it prompts you to log in. Yes.
That's exactly it. The top link there is the link that would have been come down for administrators.
Yeah.
It'll lead you to all the template letters for hiring, but you do have to log in.
Yeah.
Then they're there.
Okay. Thank you. There, we're good. I don't know. I try and log in and it doesn't let me. So, yeah, because I don't have HR responsibilities. So. So some of you may not be able to, if you're like me, you may not be able to log in, but you can follow up and get access if you really need it. I don't think it's HR is really that strict on it. And so just quickly back to the homepage. So I've added a little what's new. So you'll see the next meeting, and then you'll see recent communications sent out as well. But, and then we have a little, got a question, send us, and you can just click on it, and it'll have a little web form, and you can send us a question.
feel free to use it. We don't get that since it started, and this was a year ago. I've received two, two inquiries, and one was a PI looking for funding opportunities. So, if you have questions, don't hesitate. I mean, most of you, we all work together, so you're just sending it directly to me, which is fine. But you can always send an inquiry through the RAN listserv or through the RAN, which goes to the RAN email address.
Yeah. And the nice thing too is if you scroll down to the bottom of the webpage, was it there? I saw it 2 seconds ago. Maybe it's back.
What were you looking for?
There was an OSR checklist at the bottom. Like it was a. Where did I see it?
It's in the quick links.
No, it's at the bottom. There we go.
Oh, well, that's just because
it's our OSR.
Yeah, it's just because it's the OSR website. But yes, you can go to the OSR checklist from the OSR website. Oh, and actually, I should, while I have it open, you may have noticed that the OSR checklist changed recently. There's just been a little modification. So, it fires up the budget page, if you say there's no budget, you click no, and then another page shows up for the budget. In the past, it just had two types of indirect costs specified. It was either 15% or 40%, and it wasn't really clear on what it applied to. So now we've made it much clearer so that in line with the indirect cost policy, grants and gifts from government and not-for-profit sponsors have 15%, clinical trials 30%, industry-sponsored grants and contracts. We did talk about this in the contract session, but industry-sponsored grants do have 40% indirects recovered, unless they're matching on a tri-agency, in that case they're lowered to 25%. So even if it's an unrestricted, they may call it a gift, they may call it an unrestricted grant, it would be 40% if it's coming from industry. And then the rate allowed by sponsor as per written guidelines or negotiated rate by McGill University. McGill's policy for grants is that it recovers 15% or the maximum allowable by sponsor. So some sponsors will allow up to 20%. In those cases, we do recover 20%. So 20% should be included. And so just make sure that, and, oh, yes.
For service agreements, that would be 40% then, or?
Generally, yes. Yeah. Oh, but when's the 65 apply on government?
Only if it's bid
contracts. Okay. Bid contracts with public works are 65.
Yeah. Public works.
So I guess there's another little but.
It's not there.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you start getting through it, the list gets longer and longer, and then, you know.
There's a link there to the indirect cost policy, so we, if not sure, we link from there and go see the policy.
And with that, that's everything I had to say. Oh, and just make sure that PIs are using this revised checklist. So use the new link. Just update your links. If you've been sending the link to people, just update your link. Otherwise, that's everything I had to say. Again, we really want this website to be helpful and useful for people, so let us know what you want there, and we're happy to do our best to make it happen. Yes. Oh, yes.
Sorry. For the eligibility grid, it used to be it was all the different agencies and QIT, like all of them.
Yeah, what had happened was that was created as an internal document in 2009. And because of resources, we've only had time to go back and really vet the tri-agency. And so because we weren't exactly, you know, we couldn't confirm that everything in all the other categories was valid, it was decided that it would be removed and then we just start adding more as we have time to go through them. In the case of the FRQNT and the FRQSC, they are actually changing their own policy. They're trying to harmonize. They're basically going with a tri-agency financial administration guide. Like they're trying. They keep saying we're all going to be the same. We're all going to be the same soon, but it keeps not happening. So, but knowing that they are doing those discussions internally, we're a little hesitant to put something out that says these are their rules, because every year they keep changing their rules. But we are intending to add more to that grid.
The two summer sessions this year, last year was our bread and butter tri-agency. This year will be bread and butter our provincial agencies. So we will be updating that grid at that time, hoping that the trois fonds will have issued by then their harmonized guidelines. If not, then we'll, you know, we'll just do it based on what they currently have printed. So it is coming. And we'll also be putting NIH and other granting agencies as we get them. Yeah. Again, we have a lot on our to-do list. But again, we're open to adding more things on the to-do list. We just need to be patient. But if you have ideas, suggestions, please let us know. We'll add it on the to-do list.
Yeah. And in the case of the FRQ as well, they actually, in addition to harmonizing, they may be changing some of their program structure. So, well, hopefully they'll have more of it confirmed when we do the bread and butter session. But right now, they've just mentioned it in passing, these ideas that they're proposing. So we'll let you know as things change for them.
Can you go back to where that eligibility document is? Just so it's in the cheat sheet.
Sorry, I have a lot of add-ons in my Microsoft, so it takes a long time. There we go.
Yeah. So that's what it is.
Oops. Yeah, so, what's with the view? I see. Someone split the screen. I'll fix that. But view. Yeah. Anyway.
We might need to put in a PDF.
Yeah, I'll there we go. So yeah, someone froze the pane, so anyway, I couldn't see it. So basically what you have is you have a little guide on what is okay, what's not okay, what do you need. As with all expenses, of course, it all depends on if it has to be related to the objectives of the research, you know. So it just because it's a yes answer doesn't mean it's necessarily yes in this case. So it's yes, but I always say that, you know, yes, this is an eligible expense provided it is supporting the research objectives, and that's always important to make clear to researchers as well, because they'll see it on the list and say, no, it's you have to allow this. It says yes. It's like yes, but you know. So the same thing with the eligibility grid, that it's always provided it's supporting the objectives of the research. And an important one, I've talked about it before, but for stipends, all the tri-agencies don't have any guidelines anymore on stipends. So, and McGill doesn't have set standards. There's some at departmental levels where they decided that we want to pay students a minimum of this, but McGill doesn't have guidelines on that. So there are actually no minimum maximums for stipends on tri-agency grants. That's something that has changed since 2009, so that's what we updated in the table.
Anything else?
Are there any other questions? Oh, yes.
I'd like to have, if possible, an info ed refresher or one-on-one, or is that doable?
Yeah, definitely. We just, we can start a waiting list, and once I have, you know, 10 names or something, I can go and get the facility. If you do, would people be interested in actually like with the computers? Because if everyone has the computers,
yes.
Okay, then I will need a waiting list. Like I will need to get everybody's name because we have to go to IT to, you know, set up a training course.
So we'll circulate something on the RAN to sign up for InfoEd training.
How do you get access to that? Do I just email you?
Yeah, you can email me and I'll give you the form and the details. Yep. But yeah, if we have enough, I'd be happy to run InfoEd training or refresher for anyone who wants it. And if we have enough people, I'm sure IT would let us do it. It's just a matter of because there are limited rooms, it may not be, you know, immediately right after, you know, it may take a few months for it to be set up, but absolutely. And are there any other questions? Anyone have anything else? Yes.
Regarding the POPS timesheets, you know, the new POPS timesheets, so regarding the delegates, so I'm getting signatures not only from PIs, but from technicians, from research associates, from anything but the FFM. Could you be a little, maybe clear, could I have a clearer guideline on it?
So the POP timesheet has to be signed by the FFM or the delegate.
Yeah.
And the delegation menu now has the radio button for the POP timesheet. So if the FFM chooses to delegate, he has to go and do so on the delegation menu. So he or she can delegate to an associate, to a technician, to whomever.
Yes, even a UNACA staff?
Pardon me?
A delegate could be a UNACA staff?
It could be anyone that has the knowledge to administer the researcher's funds. So if the researcher is confident that this UNACA staff is the person to manage all of his or his grants, then that's his responsibility.
Okay.
But the person who's the delegate cannot be the supervisor of that staff, right? So if someone's working for me and is filling out a timesheet, I'm his or her direct supervisor, but I'm not the FFM. Mm-hmm. I cannot be the delegate as well. Okay. Did everybody understand that?
Okay. And just to expand on the delegation, there's no restriction on who it can be, but the PI is responsible to be able to make the case that this was an appropriate decision. You know.
It has to be the PI himself, Russell and Anurva, and actually delegate, or can I do that for him?
I think you can do that.
System and delegate, but he will have to go approve. If not, it's going to always be in this waiting queue. But you can go in and put the person's name and blah, blah, blah. But then he has to go in, log in, and approve it.
And in the case of delegation, the PI still remains responsible. So that's what you want to make clear to them. So if they're assigning it to someone that you don't think is a responsible delegate, make it clear to them that whatever happens, they are still responsible for all activity in this fund.
So if a delegate is putting through 4 or 5 timesheets and then the PI realizes it a year later and says, well, why did you let it through? Well, you had delegated that this person could sign the timesheets.
Okay. Now, another thing, too, is that delegation menu, you can go in there, I think, and set it up for 1 year if you wanted to.
Yes.
But you need to make sure the PI understands that it cannot be done to facilitate his administrative tasks. Okay, that is something the tri-agency keeps harping on. Yes, you can delegate. If I'm a PI and going away for 2-3 weeks, I can delegate. That's what should be the best practice. It shouldn't be delegation ongoing for 1 year if the PI is on site. Okay, because the PI, like Amy said, is ultimately responsible for the conduct of that research, both administratively and research-wise in a lab.
Okay, the question I have, why I'm asking, is because the PI is on sabbatical.
So he
left his research associate on signing authority for everything.
That's fine. The tri-agency or any other agency doesn't stipulate to us what is the criteria of a delegate. They just say it has to be a responsible and knowledgeable person. So it can't just willy-nilly be anyone. And again, the PI is ultimately responsible. Okay?
Yeah, but asking the supervisor to also put the timesheets.
Always, right? As a supervisor, you need to know that those hours were worked by your staff member, and the FFM, whoever's fund is being charged, must be approving that as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So next session?
Next session is on interinstitutional agreements, and it will cover the pre-award, post-award. So anyone who's working in any of those, which should be pretty much everybody, I would recommend attending, because it's not just a post-award issue, it's also pre-award, because there's a lot of planning that has to be involved. Other institutions should be contacted. So it's something that everyone should be aware of. So we'll see you then in February. I'll circulate the survey shortly, and keep checking the RAND website, because there will be a lot more tools coming up in the next few weeks. Thank you very much.